Hello and welcome to the Home Uplink podcast. Today is July 23rd, 2021.
It's Friday.
It's Fri-yay.
Fri-yay.
Friday. End of the week.
Exactly.
End of the work week.
Work week. Exactly. Not,
you know. Not end of working, just the work week.
Correct.
But yeah, it's a bit of a gloomy day outside today. Very rainy.
We just had a little bit of a thunderstorm roll through, which, you know, is pretty cool to watch, and all the rain coming down, which is definitely different from living in a desert for the last 20 years. So I still enjoy watching the rain and listening to the thunder. So you might hear some nice thunder in the background and Zach coughing, but, you know, that is that's just part of the movie magic, I guess, you know, actual sound effects and Zach dying.
Yeah, and me swallowing my spit wrong, I guess.
So today we are going to talk about, has to do with just the general wellness of the real estate market and also the moratorium, which is supposed to end in about a week. So we have been watching closely because each time it gets closer and closer, the government tends to extend it with the CDC and their guidelines about how, you know, they don't want to allow people being evicted due to the COVID virus. So on that aspect, we have been in limbo because we're waiting to see how the real estate market tends to fare after the mass exodus of renters or foreclosures in the market. And what we keep seeing is the federal and local courts of these states keep filing against the CDC because they see in the near future them possibly extending the moratorium, which would then again put in my idea, it's basically putting Band-Aids on bullet holes. It's a quick fix, but in the long run, it can severely devastate not only the economy, but also the real estate market.
I mean, at this point, it's been on since March of last year. Yes. So we're going on over a year now where, you know, this was put into place and it's been extended, I think, four times now.
Yeah. So
first it was the end of the summer last year.
Then it was
the end of winter because they said, no, we don't want to put people out in the holidays. And then they extended it. And then it was supposed to end May 1st, and then they did June, and then now July.
So there are reports out there saying that the government has not, they do not want to extend this. They feel like they've done enough to where they've given people enough time to figure out their next move if they have been negatively affected by COVID. A real quick synopsis of the moratorium in general is a lot of people don't understand, but it's basically a stop on all pre-foreclosures, forbearances, or evictions. So what that means is everybody who hasn't paid in anywhere between, 14, 15, 16 months now?
And now this really, you know, the protections that they supply in the CARES Act and the, whatever the other one is, that allows for most of these things, they only apply to federally backed loans, which is the important stipulation to it.
So that's another huge point is if you've gone out and, you know, somebody has purchased a property in the relative, you know, past, so a couple years, and they decided to go with an FHA loan, which is a federal backed loan, what Zach's saying. That's the loan that the CARES Act, you know, has been trying to.
Yeah, it covers VA, USDA, and FHA loans.
Correct. But if you look at everybody who used different types of loans,
conventional, jumbo,
yeah, exactly.
Anything balloon, other than that,
they're not necessarily covered and are potentially, if they haven't been making any payments,
well, they're liable.
Liable. I mean,
that's what it comes down to is. You know, they allow deferment for federal programs. So if you have an FHA loan, they allow the payments that you were incapable of making to be deferred to the end of your loan as a balloon payment. Correct. Or just added on to the end to extend the life of the loan because it's backed federally. But from my understanding, now the bill's like 10 billion and a half pages, so who knows? But from what I've heard and read myself, that is what it is.
But the interesting part about that bill and what I've been reading about as well, though, is the amount that they allocated toward that specific fund has only been tapped in about 4%.
Yeah.
So they allocated billions and billions of dollars to be able to help individuals who did get behind, but at the same time, it sounds like to me they're taking a little bit of extra time on their end to be able to disperse those funds. So even if somebody does have a federally backed loan and they don't get their paperwork in, you know, in a reasonable time and the government doesn't get back to them, they could potentially still lose their home or lose their rental because there are stipulations and guidelines that you have to abide by applying for those funds.
Yeah. And, you know, here's one of the main issues is that, if the moratorium ends and somebody isn't aware of it ending and isn't aware that the protections aren't in place anymore, if they were to not make their mortgage payment or their rent payment then for the next month,
yes,
then they would be liable the same way that somebody who isn't, who doesn't have a federally backed loan is liable currently.
Well, the government also has been a savior for people who have been collecting unemployment as well, and the extra amount of unemployment is going to run out, I believe, in August, and most likely what's going to happen is people are going to try and draw on to that until that time, and when that time is done and they're not making that extra money, they're either going to have to go back and get a job somewhere doing something to pay the bills, or they're going to do exactly what Zach said. They're not going to pay their payment, and it's going to be too long past the CARES Act, and then they're going to go into forbearance or foreclosure.
I mean, it'll be, they'll be delinquent, and they'll go through the same process that anybody else does when that happens, which is delinquency and then forbearance, acceleration, and then...
So we've been watching and reading a lot of things about, people are calling it like a doomsday clock. And, you know, we don't necessarily think it's going to be a doomsday clock, but a lot of these banks and loan platforms have been tying August as one of their definite...
A lot of people in the mortgage industry
have been gearing up for this.
And people who work in not repossessions, but, you know, delinquent loans and things like that in large banking institutions and whatnot. There's been rumblings that they basically are like, all right, no, you know, basically like you can't take time off in August, you know, get ready, blah, blah, blah. They're basically, trying to pinpoint something, you know, but to mince words and say, oh, well, you know, this, that, or the other. It's like, okay, well, it's basically people saying, okay, well, do you want a dozen of these or do you want two half dozens of those, right? It's correct. Like, it's the same amount. Everything's going to equate to the same thing. Nobody wants to say anything. Nobody wants to say, oh, yeah, I mean, you know, the delinquent mortgages, the rate's really, really high. And it's like, well, yeah, but, you know, everybody has protections. And it's like, well, the only people who have protections are federally backed, and they've probably already used those, which means they wouldn't be delinquent anymore. If they were still deferring their payments, they wouldn't be in that statistic.
So I'd hate to say that most people... I myself are a bit of a procrastinator. Let's just say that. Let's just say, you know, throughout college and you know, I wasn't the quickest to get, you know, I obviously got my assignments in and, you know, my work in, but I wasn't obviously like on the ball when, it came to starting. And I have a feeling that a lot of people are, this is going to sneak up on them because, you know, a lot of news outlets don't necessarily talk about the moratorium or talk about the issue with the extra payments for unemployment. They're mostly talking about a certain thing, which is, again, now the Delta variant. And it kind of comes back to how I see things. And if they're really pushing this narrative that is the Delta variant will be, you know, 10 times easier to be susceptible than normal COVID. And oh my gosh, it's, you know, ravaging places that haven't been, you know, immunized and all this stuff. I have a feeling that's going to be the platform that they might use to try and push this moratorium at least for another month or two.
Yeah, I mean, it is. The problem that I have with it is, you know, they keep people uninformed about very real things that they shouldn't be uninformed on. And then they keep people overinformed on things that really don't matter much, right? You know, for instance, them sitting there and saying, hey, well, you know, this is happening over here and this is happening over there and this is why this is happening. And that's why this is happening. It's like, okay, I mean, yeah, that's great, I guess. Not really. This doesn't apply to me at all. You know, these, it's like, what's the quote? It is, if you don't read the newspaper, you're uninformed. If you read the newspaper, you're misinformed, right?
Correct, yep.
It's literally that. And if you sit there and say, oh, well, you know, no, I'm going to sit here and, you know, I'm going to get as much information as possible from every aspect everywhere, and I'm going to condense it, I'm going to eat it up, and I'm going to get it myself. I'm going to take everything that's said to me, digest it, and then take the important bits. It's like, that's great, but the topics of, you know, the people's basically their protections running out, right? Their governmental provided protections running out is not a big talking point. And I'm sure somebody will say, oh, well, you know, right here in this 2-minute segment, 6 months ago, they said something about it. Yeah. So obviously they, it's like, well, no, it's like, it doesn't get wall to wall coverage like it should, because there are, like you're saying, there's a lot of people who procrastinate and there's a lot of people who don't know, right? There's a lot of people who don't know what protections were provided to them, that they can go to their lender and say, hey, you know, I do need my payments deferred. I was incapable of making my payments because of COVID and COVID-related reasons.
Well, and then it comes back to also, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, because you look at it, you can go, okay, yeah, if you're a responsible individual who did lose, you know, their income or had, you know, a hardship due to COVID, I feel like over the last 14 months, you would have had that already approached. And I feel like people who have waited this long to approach any of their lenders and explain what's going on, they didn't take it as seriously maybe as they should have.
I mean, they have, yeah. I mean, you know, I'll say it's really wait until the, you know, the last hour, right? Because it's 8 days until the end of July.
Yeah.
And protections are supposed to end on the 1st of August. I haven't heard any rumblings of them being extended yet.
No.
I mean, because the last time in June when we thought they weren't, it was already like June 3rd. And they were like, oh, we think we're going to extend it to July.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I mean, I guess so, but, you know, it is what it is. But we already knew that was going to happen, you know, pretty much at the start of the month.
Yeah, we were waiting for the just announcement.
It would be, I guess it wouldn't be unheard of at this point in time, because I think everything's happened, you know, in this day and age. But it would be very weird for them to just say on Friday, you know, the day before the month ends, they're just like, hey,
By the way,
we're extending it another month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, however long, right? Because that doesn't really help anybody, because the people who are, the issue is that the protections in place are only allowing for a certain amount of protection. And so if you were to sit there and say, oh, I'm going to defer my payments, It's like, okay, well, that's, you know, that's an opportunity. That's great. You don't have to worry about losing your property and you can defer your payments to the end. And that's great. You know, it's a great protection added, yeah, right?
I mean, that they didn't have that any
you know, the last time, right? Yeah. The last time these sort of things happened, they didn't, that wasn't something that mattered.
Said, give me the property back. We own it now.
Yeah. So now you get the option of deferring and then those payments either come to the end or a balloon payment at the end. But chances are you're probably not living in the property you're living in for 30 years or however long until your loan's done. So you're going to pay it off anyway at sale, whenever sale is,
yeah,
which is an opportunity for every person who's taking advantage of it. Because it's like, okay, great. This is a great opportunity for a bad situation, right?
Yes.
And it really helps because it can turn things around. And
so with that being said though, Zach, do you think, I have a hinkling too, though, that once, I don't want to call them landlords, but once people who own the property who have actual renters who haven't paid and they've had, you know, this CARES Act, so they've gotten, you know, 14 or 15 months now with rent free as long as they filled out the proper paperwork. Mm-hmm. Do you think that a lot of those individuals are going to turn around and try and sell immediately to try and either make whatever amount of money that they need to off the property, or potentially they have also not been able to pay that property because they haven't been making any rent?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of situations, because here's the thing that people don't realize, and here's the overarching thing that nobody talks about, and this is what I mean in the by you're underinformed on purpose, right? Is nobody really cares about the federally backed mortgages, personally. I mean, nobody really cares because they're federally backed, right? You're protected by, you know, governmental agencies basically saying that your payments are going to be deferred and blah, blah, blah. That's not what's going to cause what's going to happen. People don't realize. They're like, yeah. Oh, well, I'm protected. It's like, that's great. I'm glad you are. You know, I'm glad you took advantage of it and I'm glad that you were able to use it because I don't want the same thing to happen to everybody that did in 2008, right? It's like, because nobody wants that to happen, but that's not the reason why it is going to happen. Because people realize, you know, oh, well, I'm protected. I have my FHA. Great. But people who don't, which constitutes a large portion of the market, because a lot of people aren't using federally backed mortgages right now, well, because they've purchased properties before,
yeah,
which disallows them.
Well, from also, able, too, if you have an investment property.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is somebody who owns their home currently with a conventional loan, and then let's say, okay, they also have maybe 1, 2, 3 investment properties that they also own, right? With a conventional loan as well, because you can't get a federally backed mortgage on an investment property, right? Legally, I should say.
Yes.
So with that being the case, they would have 3, 4, 2, however many mortgages on a conventional loan, which means they don't get the protections that were provided in the CARES Act, which means if they were using the rent from the income property to pay the mortgage on that property, then they haven't gotten that in 14 months, however long it is, right? Which puts them way past anything, right? They don't, so either they've been scraping by and paying the mortgage on both their property and their investment properties themselves in these certain, you know, situations that we're talking about. And in which case they, I guess they've been making a lot of money because they have been paying, you know, however many mortgages, and the difference of which is going straight to them because somebody's not either paying them because of hardships, whatever. But here's really where the issue comes into play, and what I don't think people understand is the increase in property, in inventory, is really what shoots the market in its foot. And what happens now is with conventionally backed loans not being protected and a very large portion of the homes in the United States falling under the non-protected group.
Correct.
When this moratorium ends and evictions and all these proceedings are capable of beginning, the people who own investment properties, or not even the people who own their properties in general, or don't, I should say, rather, they still have a loan on them. They're going to be, you know, I mean, subsequently, it's going to be a large portion of people being evicted, either renters or owners of the property, because there's no longer protections enacted. And they weren't able to take advantage of the federally backed program of deferring their payments or not having to worry about their forbearance or anything like that. And so they'll probably end up in short sale or something the like, right?
Yep.
Which in turn, we can sit here and talk about every day and all day about how short sales reduce the price of every neighborhood because if something sells for the loan amount, blah, blah, blah. You've heard it plenty of times, I'm sure. But really what the issue is an increase in property value such as that and the increase in property value that we've had over the past year, right, which has really inflated what the values of a lot of homes are, is going to probably subsequently drop because with a huge influx of properties, and you're, you know, I get it, there's going to be properties that aren't, but every renter isn't probably going to sell their property. No. Are a lot of renters going to sell their property? Probably. They're probably either going to have to, whether they want to or not, or they're going to because they want out of the game, right? Correct. This kind of burned them, right? So that's going to be a huge market on top of the already the people who are in you know, dire straits.
Well, right? So for example, I mean, if it was me and I was sitting here and I had a couple rental properties and I had some people who have not paid and I'm sitting there holding the bill, okay, knowing that the future, because we have been dealing with this for now 14 months when everyone thought this was going to be like a blip on the radar, knowing that, you know, this could not go away for a while still to come, I think that's going to then dwell on a lot of people because if it was me and I was thinking, okay, I have a portfolio with five properties and, you know, three have been making the payments, no problem, but two have not, right? Would I rather
cash out
and have that money sitting in, you know, a liquid form for the next coming 2, 3, 4 years because I don't know what's going to pan out now? Or would I try and ride the wave, try and get new renters in there, try and flip the property? Because unfortunately, it is a negative thing when somebody gets evicted because they tend to trash the property. And it happens quite often, unfortunately, where people get malice and they get very upset because they feel like they've been wronged and they haven't made it. Just happens. I mean, Vegas, there was a lot of properties that had to be completely renovated because renters had just done some nefarious things to the property before leaving. So if it came down and I was the individual who had these properties and I was holding the bill, I would, in my opinion, I would probably try and sell as quick as possible in order to be able to liquidate and hold because I have no idea what the future is going to entail. And that might be my own perspective on the issue, but I have a feeling a lot of people who, you know, they might not need, I have been doing five rentals, but I don't necessarily need all of that income any longer. I'd rather take the $150,000 or $200,000 worth of cash if I sell the property tomorrow. They might think, okay, that's going to be a better outlet for me now because, I was making $600 a month off this one property, but for the last 14 months, I've been paying it in full because obviously the renter hasn't. So what do I do? And if it was up to me, I would have probably, the second I got my hands on those properties and is able to, I would probably try and at least flip them and sell them. And I have a feeling that's what a lot of people are going to do.
Yeah, I think that's really what's going to come to be a huge issue. I mean, there's going to be people who, I mean, in Vegas, like you said, there's pretty much we saw everything when it came to you know, the state of properties that were evicted, where, you know, somebody would pour concrete in the toilets, you know, and then you'd have to get a crane to get the toilets out.
Or steal all the appliances, or, you know, just, or leave holes in the walls, just, or, you know, rip out the wiring in the walls, or,
you know,
I mean, crack every tile. Or, yeah. And I mean, they would do so many nasty things. They would pull the insulation out from the ceiling so that, you know, they would break. I mean,
they'd, yes. So what I'm saying is, you know, that leads to issues, because what happens is now the property is going to need to be redone. And in that amount of time, the person probably doesn't have the money if they're doing this. So it's just going to be foreclosed on, which means...
Or short sale.
Or short sale, right? And in doing so, like I said, it's not good for anyone. You know, even the, especially the person that's sitting there and getting evicted, it's not good for them either, because, you know, they're... Now the property value on everything has just lost, you know, normally a short sale sells for 30 to 40% under the value of the property.
And that's what,
right?
And that's what we're just trying to get at, is with, you know, the extension of the moratorium, you know, you're only going to be putting, you know, a potential Band-Aid on. And what might happen later this year is when they finally lift it, it's going to have the same repercussions, except it's just going to be a different time of the year. And by the end of July, if I was to give an option for people who were going to try and sell their investment properties, you'd obviously want to try and sell them during the summer.
Okay? Yeah.
And you know, it's obviously harder to sell during holiday season, because people aren't really willing to move during, you know, a Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's time, especially in our part of the country. It's not that, because it's weather, you know, it's more of just, it's, that's a family and
it's holidays. Yeah.
So, you know, even if you extended it, and even if the government came out, you know, next week saying that we've looked at the numbers and we feel like, you know, I don't think they're going to do that, due to the fact that they have been trying to get so many people to get the shot. And by doing that, they have now crossed off that box, saying, we gave everybody the opportunity to feel safe again. We gave them the opportunity to go get the shot. We gave them the opportunity, if they needed it, to go get it done. And now, you know, we have no control over what's going to happen in your own livelihood, because you now should be able to feel comfortable to go out there and get a job, or feel comfortable to go out there and start making some more money so that you could go back to life.
Yeah. And here's the other side of the coin that nobody talks about at all, literally zero people, because they don't think it has anything to do with the residential market, when in reality it has a lot to do with the residential market. People don't know this, unless you're really looking to get into it, get into business, start your own business, or you work in commercial real estate, but there is an absolute wasteland.
Correct.
That commercial real estate has become.
Yes.
It is an absolute wasteland. People think that it's beyond laughable, honestly, because think about it from this perspective. In 2019, right, everybody's working at their work, at their job, in their office, cubicle, wherever it is, right? And 2 years later, pretty much a large portion of the workforce now doesn't want to go. They want to work from home, right? And that's all well and good. Hey, I like working from home too.
Yeah.
So don't get me wrong. This isn't me disparaging on that. But what I'm saying is the economic impact that it has, because you have to realize, when you sign a lease for a building,
yes,
it's not a month-to-month lease.
No.
It's not a 12-month lease. Normally, they're 3, 5, 10, and 20-year leases, right?
And sometimes they're full guarantees.
And yes, sometimes they basically are liable for the building, right? And so in some instances, and, you know, around us in Vegas too, the problem was that when the companies got closed and they weren't able to make money, the leases and the loans they have on commercial properties, those aren't federally backed by any means. There's no protections in place for those.
No.
And so what happens is the owners of those properties haven't been making any money off of their commercial leases. The people who have been running their businesses out of the commercial spaces haven't been able to run their business. Or if they have, they've been running operations out of their home, but they're still on the hook for their lease and or the guarantee, yep. Right? So the issue that comes into play that literally nobody talks about is the fact that once this is all over and there's so much unleased commercial space in the United States right now,
yeah,
it's crazy because so many people work from home, and that's great. But what I'm saying is the impact for businesses as a whole is that since they've been closed, since they haven't been able to run their companies, since they haven't been able to use the spaces that they've rented or have been using, right? The ability for them to, how do I put this lightly? If I had a $20,000 a month lease on a building,
okay,
and I haven't been able to operate my business,
yes,
for 10 months.
Okay.
Right. On and off, but really just terrible business for 10 months straight.
Yeah.
And I have a $20,000 a month lease. So I've had I have to pay $200,000 plus my utilities.
Yeah.
Plus my water, plus all my operating expenses. Right. So let's say I'm close to $27,000 a month. Right. So close to $300K in those 10 months. Right. Now, the payment protections is only for your payroll. So the payment protections that they gave each company that was able to get it was only for payroll.
Yeah.
Which means you can continue to pay the employees. That's great. And that was a great thing for those companies that could get it. But that doesn't suffice for any of their operations or any of their rent or anything other than paying people's wages. Well, right?
And look at it like this. What if you were running a 5,000 square foot building and you were paying $10,000 a month and now that building is completely empty and most of your workforce that was in there, let's say you had 15 to 20 people in that 5,000 square foot building, maybe 15 out of the 20 have decided that they want to work from home. And you've given them that option because you feel that, yeah, they are productive enough and business has been, but yet you're still on the tab for that 5,000 square foot building.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. The issue is that, so you have somebody who's sitting here with a bill for $300K in front of them,
yeah, right?
And then you have people who are saying, well, we don't want to come back into the office,
yeah,
because we don't feel safe or it's more comfortable working from home. I do a better job from home. I can do more from here. Whatever the reason people have, right? The person has. The issue with this is there's some companies that are saying, too bad, so sad, come back into the office or you lose your job.
Correct.
I know there's quite a few companies in New York that are doing it where they're saying, no. People are saying, oh, well, I'm going to work from, Kentucky. Because I can work from Kentucky and do my job as a investment banker in New York. And the investment company's going, no, if you want to be paid New York money, you have to be in New York.
Correct.
And they go, well, I can just do my job from here. It doesn't matter. And they said, that's not what I said.
Yeah.
They said, if you want us to pay you, you have to be here. And that's happening in some industries right now. And the reason for it is because there has to be, if they have a 6 floors in a building on, whatever street, and they have this many offices that they need to fill, and they've been an investment firm for 200 years, right? Mm. They kind of are going to regulate how they do business that way, right?
Absolutely.
And so people who say, well, I'm not going to go back. I'm just going to continue to do my job. And they say, okay, well, you're not going to have a job with us anymore.
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, well, I'll find a different one. That works to a degree because what I'm saying, the issue is going to be is that in these circumstances specifically, I know this is a very long-winded way to get around to it, but what I'm trying to round up together is that the company that has all this money shelled out and has people that don't want to work there anymore, basically, yeah, by saying, if you don't, allow me to work from home, I'm not going to work here, right? Companies can't operate.
No.
So, it's like, okay, well, the workforce is sticking to their guns and saying, this is what we want. We want to work from home. We don't want to go back into the office. It's soul sucking, blah, blah, blah. Great. I get it, right? I understand. But what I'm saying is there's not going to be a company to work for.
Yes.
If that continues. Because correct. What's going to happen is not the aspect of, if every person says, no, I'm not going to come back into the office, I'm only going to work from home. There's only so many companies that can allot for that. And the companies that can't allot for that and have no capabilities, or less capabilities, I should say, of people working from home, you know, they still have the lease on their building. They need people to be in there in order to work it, right?
Correct.
And in doing so, if there's nobody that wants to come in and work there because they've been doing it from home for 14 months or however long, then that company won't last.
Correct.
And then what happens is there's, what I'm saying is there's a ripple effect pretty much, right? And it's less about the problem of real estate and blah, blah. It's that people have expenses that haven't been getting paid, right? On both ends, whether you're the owner of the company or the person who's leasing the space or the owner of the building, whatever. The world works on debts owed and debts paid. That's how a financial system works, yep. Right? So if somebody can't pay,
yeah,
and their business goes under,
then
that means all the employees correct. That work there and make their wages and allow them to live their life have to go somewhere else. And there's only so many times that can happen until there's no jobs for somebody in that field.
Correct.
Right? And it's like, oh, well, I'll just code. Yeah, okay, that's great. But, you know, there's a reason why they say that. And if you don't know what the whole gib to that is if they sit there and have 357 million people learn to code, then that means they can pay you minimum wage.
Yeah, because everyone does it.
Because everybody does it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't become a commodity when 357 million people know how to do it. That's why they're telling everybody to do it. Not because, oh, it's this useful skill to have. It's amazing. It's perfect. Everyone should learn how to do it. No, they're trying to flood the market so it costs, you know, Jeff Bezos less money to have developers at Amazon.
Correct.
Okay. So, yeah, it may be great now. You may say, oh, all these tech jobs are great. I can work from home and do all this and do all that. If your job doesn't allow you to do that, get into tech. That's great. That's awesome. I think people should. We're a tech company ourselves. But I'm telling you, it's disingenuous because they're doing it for a reason, right?
Yeah.
And so what happens is there's only so many developer jobs.
Yep.
There's only so many of these jobs out there. And you're like, oh, well, no, I want a job that pays me $100,000 like my investment job does, but I don't want to have to go back to New York.
I work my own hours and work from home.
Yeah, that doesn't,
happen overnight.
No. And so what's going to happen is there's going to be a large ripple effect of people. Whether they leave their jobs and say, well, there's tons of jobs, people are looking, you know, I see stuff all the time where it's like, there's, you know, a hiring craze, everybody's looking for people to work at their businesses and stuff. And it's like the same reason people are looking for more people is the same reason people are leaving.
Yeah.
It's exactly, they're fulfilling the same, you know, you're filling the same pool that they're emptying, right? The people who left the job that you're taking left for the same reasons probably you're joining that one.
And, you know, and on a positive note, it could potentially open up a lot of places that weren't accessible for everybody else, because if somebody, you know, like Zach says, leaves a position because they don't feel comfortable going in, there could be somebody who's been waiting to get that position who will go into the office, yeah, and no, vice versa. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of interchanging individuals and careers, which are obviously going to affect the market as well, because with people making less or more money, there's going to be an influx in what they can and can't afford. But, you know, on that end, I know that we went off on a little bit of a tangent again about the moratorium and setting it up. So we're going to watch very closely next week, because next week is going to be that kind of time period where they're going to decide yes or no, if they're going to extend it or not. And we'll definitely do a podcast probably later next week to either say, yeah, they didn't do it or they did. So, you know, we appreciate, again, you coming by on a Friday, and, you know, stepping in and listening to the ramblings of two guys sitting in office, which should probably be the name of the next podcast. Two guys just sitting in an office.
Two guys rambling away in an office.
Two guys yelling at each other about aliens. Who knows? But, you know, stop by again. If you have any questions, you know, you can always email them at admin@homeuplink.com. If you're interested in getting in contact with us, you can go to our website as well. We're going to be doing a lot more promotional stuff in the near future, so you might be hitting us up some other outlet. But, you know, if you appreciate, you know, I appreciate everyone coming in. And if you have any questions or concerns, shoot them our way.
Yeah, thanks for listening.